Thank you, Marshall. Can you please call court to order?
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Reyes, Judge Frisch, Judge Hallbrooks, and the Honorable Peter M. Reyes, Jr. presiding.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, November 4th, 2021. We have four cases on our calendar for today. Three are set for oral argument. This is the second of the three. This is A21-0209. State of Minnesota versus Emilio Nieto. We are doing this via Zoom.gov. We appreciate both of you accommodating us in this fashion. We are recording this. No other recordings are permitted at this time. If we do have any technical issues, we will address them as they come up. We will make sure that we accommodate anything that happens to make sure that you each have the appropriate amount of time to make your arguments. And we have on occasion run into technical issues, and we'll make sure that that we'll be able to take care of them. As both of you know, you will have 15 minutes each for oral argument and then 5 minutes for rebuttal by appellant. And with that, attorney for appellant, you may proceed. Please state your name for the record and the party you're representing.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning. I just want to make the court aware that I am hard of hearing in one ear. And so if I ask you to repeat yourselves, it's because I simply just cannot hear you. My name is Jennifer Workman. I'm an assistant public defender, and I represent Emilio Nieto. He is the appellant. Mr. Nieto asks for reversal for two reasons, Your Honors. First, the officer did not have reasonable suspicion to expand the scope of the stop and search the car. And second, the evidence was insufficient to prove that Mr. Nieto jointly and constructively possessed the drugs. I would like to focus on the second issue, the possession issue, for this argument. But of course, I'm happy to answer any of the court's questions regarding either issue. Regarding that possession issue, I want to be clear about the appropriate standard of review this court should apply. The circumstantial evidence test applies here because the officer had to infer evidence of possession. He did not observe direct evidence of possession. And I also want to make sure that this court doesn't fall into the same trap that the district court did, and that is conflating the element of knowledge with the element of possession. The district court's order conflated knowledge with possession when the district court found that he became, and this is a quote from page 8 of the district court's order, he became aware of the nature of the substances and exercised dominion and control when he became aware of the nature of the substances and did not abandon his plans. That is an incorrect application of the law. What happened here is that the drugs were found in two places in the car, some in a backpack, and then some in the trunk area in a box. Mr. Nieto did not have any drugs on his person. He gave us...
So, Ms. Workman, I think that the question that I have for you really relates to whether we have some direct evidence here of his possession of the drugs, because he did admit, I read the transcript of his custodial interview. It does appear to me that he had some significant language barriers with the officer who was examining him. But he did admit that at some point in time when he was in Utah or in some other state, that he picked up the backpack that contained the majority of the drugs that were found in the vehicle. And at that point in time, he realized it was heavy and he inquired why it was so heavy. And he knew that there were drugs in the backpack. Now, presumably he put the backpack someplace else. He put it down at some point in time. Why isn't that direct evidence of his possession, custody, or control of the drugs?
That is direct evidence of his knowledge that there were drugs there because he picked up the backpack and realized it was heavy, as you said, and asked his co-defendant what was going on there. And she said that they had, quote unquote, shit in the car, which means that he took that to mean that there were drugs in there. So that is evidence of what gave him the knowledge of what they were transporting. But it's not evidence of a direct evidence of his possession, because there's not more to say that he was exercising dominion and control over those drugs. His personal items were not with them. So let me give you some examples of things that would give you dominion and control here. If he had said, yes, those drugs were mine, that would give you dominion and control.
Well clearly. I mean, but what about him driving the car?
If he had been driving the car and the officer had seen him messing with the bags or making furtive movements towards the bags, that would give you dominion and control. If the car were his...
What if he were just driving the car knowing that there were drugs in the car and he's going from state to state? Another question after that. So that's my next question. What if he were driving the car?
If he's just driving the car, that does not give you dominion and control, because again, you need proximity, access, and more like personal items with the drugs to show that you are exercising that dominion and control. So he has no clothing with the drugs. He has.
But if he knows there's drugs in the car and he gets behind the wheel of that car and starts transporting those drugs, is that some level of control of the drugs?
It is our contention that it's not, that you need more than that here.
And what's the authority for that?
Harris, Sam, Florine, they all back this up with what steps you need to show dominion and control.
Okay. So then my next question is, assuming that, let's assume for the sake of argument that had he been driving the car and there are drugs in the car, he would have exercised dominion and control over the drugs. Is there any evidence in this record that he was actually behind the wheel of that car after he learned that there were drugs in the car? I didn't see any. And I'm just asking if there's any evidence in the record to that.
I know of none, Your Honor. And to my knowledge, he did not drive and know of the drugs at the same time.
All right. Thank you.
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honors, I just want to, again, go back and give some examples of what would give us dominion and control in these cases. So again, if he had admitted that the drugs were his, if the car had been in his name and he were found driving the car. But all of these, the circumstances that we see here point to his co-defendant Aguilar having exclusive control in this case. And Aguilar is the person who is driving the car. She is the person who knows about the drugs from the inception of this journey. Presumably, she's the person who loaded them, and we have no idea who bundled them, but it could have been her.
Ms. Workman, you mentioned that it would be a different situation if the car was in his name and he was driving the car knowing that there are drugs in there. How is that different than him driving the car if he knows that there are drugs in the car, but his name is not on, he's not the owner of the car? How is that different? I'm not sure I'm seeing the difference between those two.
Could you repeat the last part of that again, your question again?
Sure. So I'm trying to delineate between two very closely related scenarios. You said if he was the owner of the car and he was driving the car knowing that there are drugs, I'm assuming you're insinuating that drugs were in the car and he knew of those drugs, then he would be guilty of the charges. How is that different than if he's driving the car and assuming he's driving the car and assuming that he knows at that time that there are drugs in the car, but he's not the owner? Why would he be guilty in the first example, but not guilty in the second example?
I see what you're saying. There's an extra circumstance there to point to his ownership and dominion and control over the drugs than if he is the owner of the car, because it's showing that he has taken sort of like an active step in this case where he is letting his own car be used. It shows more of an active possession in that case. If it's not his car, which is not in this case, if he's not driving, he's just a passenger, there's no evidence of how he can access the drugs in the back seat. It makes it much more likely that he is just an innocent, naive person going along with his aunt for a trip, and then learns along the way that they have drugs. But that knowledge, again, does not mean that he possessed the drugs.
Okay, that's a fair argument. I want to go back and just make sure I'm clear on one point, though. Let's assume for the sake of argument that, well, here he, at some point, he realized that there were drugs in his aunt's backpack. Let's assume for the sake of argument that he did drive the car after that, knowing that there are drugs in his aunt's backpack, and knowing that that backpack is in the car that he's driving, and he's driving over state lines, so he's transporting drugs. Wouldn't that be enough to find him guilty of the charges?
I think we also need to look to the other factors that are set out in Florine, which are access and proximity. And we need to make sure that those are present before you find that the evidence would be sufficient in that type of case. And in our scenario, in the facts that came out in this case, we don't have any evidence of access, of his ability to reach back and get into the backpack, regardless of it being in the back seat. We all know that when you're a passenger in a car and there's something behind you, it's pretty difficult to get to things behind you. And it could be that as the driver, Ms. Aguilar was better situated to access those backpacks. Also, the proximity, even though it's the backpack is close to him in the back seat, the other drugs in the trunk are not. So what we have here are just missing factors to show that he's a person who was controlling this operation. And the factors that we do have show that it was Ms. Aguilar who was controlling.
So I want one more follow-up question. You mentioned that in that here, a driver would have, and Ms. Aguilar in this case, would have had better access to the backpack in the back. And there's no evidence that the passenger was appellant here. If he was driving, though, wouldn't he have had better access to the backpack with the drugs?
Perhaps. But again, we don't have any evidence in the record to support one way or another.
Okay, thank you.
Your Honors, as you're perfectly aware, the other all three charges in this case require possession as an element of the offense. And so if you reverse on count two, which is
the third is an aiding and abetting a conspiracy charge, right? The third count three.
It is a conspiracy. Yes.
So it doesn't that just require, and it's aiding and abetting, isn't it?
I don't believe.
Am I wrong about that?
I believe it's just conspiracy. Let me just check really quickly. I have it as just a conspiracy.
Just a conspiracy. Okay. So if we reverse count, this is my other question for you. If we reverse count two, I think that you're right that we necessarily reverse count one, but what do we do about count three?
I believe you also have to reverse the finding of guilt for count three as well, because possession under the Tracy case is an element of conspiracy. You have to possess the drugs in order to have this conspiracy to transport them across the state lines. And Tracy speaks directly to that. Tracy is also cited in our reply brief. Your Honors, I have no other points that I wanted to make today. Are there other questions from the panel?
No.
Does not look like we have any. Thank you very much, Counsel.
Thank you.
You have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you so choose after. Counsel for respondent, you have 15 minutes and there is a clock there, so feel free to monitor the clock to keep on time. You may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Travis Smith and I represent the respondent state of Minnesota in this appeal. Appellant seeks reversal of his conviction on two grounds. First, he argues that the officer who noted at least 15 separate articulable observations that led him to believe that criminal activity may be afoot lacked the reasonable articulable suspicion necessary to justify asking for permission to search the SUV. Appellant's argument fails for three reasons. First, appellant isolates the officer's individual observations and dismisses them as inadequate without considering the totality of the circumstances. Second, appellant claims that because there is an alternative innocent explanation for some of the officer's individual observations, they cannot contribute to the totality of the circumstances. This is an approach repeatedly rejected by this court and the Minnesota Supreme Court. Finally, appellant completely ignores the inferences the officer was permitted to make based upon his training and experience and which courts are required to defer to. The district court rightly rejected this approach, and so should this court. Second, appellant argues that the evidence is insufficient to prove that he constructively possessed the 25 pounds of methamphetamine found in the motor vehicle he was riding in when it was stopped. And in regard to this issue, it seems that appellant is completely ignoring the fact that there are two possible ways of proving constructive possession, and that the state has argued that either of those methods of constructive possession can be proved here. Specifically, appellant has ignored the fact that you can prove constructive possession and you can and joint constructive possession is possible if you can show that the place was in that the contraband was in a location under the defendant's exclusive control. There is no case law from this court or the Minnesota Supreme Court that I'm aware of or was able to find in my research that suggests that this kind of constructive possession cannot be joined. That is, that two people can't have exclusive control over a place as to the exclusion of all others and therefore knowingly possess what's in that place.
And it's just, Mr. Smith, go ahead. Can you direct us, on the other hand, to some affirmative authority that would establish that there can be more than one person with exclusive control?
The authority I would point to for that proposition is Florine, which recognizes that there can be joint constructive possession and then says that the state can prove that joint possession in two different ways. There's no distinction in the case law between either of those ways of proving constructive possession. And therefore, I think it necessarily follows that the state can prove joint constructive possession by proving that the contraband is found in a place that was in the exclusive control of a certain number of people. I mean, I'll just
be direct here, Mr. Smith. The problem that I have with the state's case, and specifically paragraph 8 of the district court's conclusions, is that I don't see any evidence in the record that he actually had any control over this vehicle. I don't see any evidence that he actually drove. I don't see any evidence that he, after he knew that there were drugs in the car, did anything to direct, control the drugs or the car at all. Is there something that I missed in the record?
I would point to the interview with investigator or Detective Elsing, where the defendant admitted that he was helping to drive.
Okay, so helping to drive does not mean that he actually drove the car. And it also doesn't mean that he actually drove the car after he knew that there were drugs in the car. Is there some other evidence in the record?
I think that's the only thing I can specifically point to at this point in time.
So then let's turn to paragraph 8 of the district court's findings, because that's where the district court that's the evidence that the district court relies on to find Mr. Nieto guilty. And the district court judge says, quote, by driving the vehicle, knowing there were controlled substances in it, he controlled the movement of the methamphetamine. Is that finding clearly erroneous?
I don't believe that that finding is clearly erroneous. I think
what's the evidence in the record that supports that finding?
And then I will go back to the evidence from the interview that that supports that finding. It may be that that finding is a finding of fact made by considering all. I think it is made by considering the entire record together, and specifically the nature of the interview. And I don't think it can be said to be clearly erroneous, because there is some support in the record for the finding. It may not be as much as another judge would like, but as the Eighth Circuit has colorfully put it, unless a finding strikes us with all the force of a five-week-old unrefrigerated dead fish, it's not clearly erroneous.
Go ahead, Judge Reyes.
Mr. Smith, I don't think we need to be hit in the face with a old dead fish, but if it's not supported by the record, it's not supported by the record. I'm trying to find, if that's all that's being relied on is helping to drive, we need to find possession, and we need to find knowledge of the drugs and then possession. And assuming for the sake of argument that driving alone, driving would be enough, is there any evidence in the record that he drove after finding out that the drugs were in the car?
And I can't point to anything specific right at this moment. So unfortunately, I can't be more helpful to the court on that point in this moment.
So then my other concern, Mr. Smith, is that we're relying now on circumstantial evidence that he was driving the car knowing that there were drugs in it. And my question to you is, do you believe that there could be a rational inference from the circumstances that have been proved, mainly he helped to drive the vehicle, that are inconsistent with a finding of guilt?
I don't think under these circumstances there are rational inferences inconsistent with that. And I think that when you look especially at his interview as a whole, it's clear that he knew what was going on and he was there to help. He knew that they were driving the drugs to Owatonna. He said he was there to help drive. He knew that they didn't have a specific destination to meet up with somebody to deliver the drugs in Owatonna, and that they would get instructions as they got closer. And he admitted that he was there to help. He was there to help drive. That's what he admitted to. He admitted to knowing the whole scheme, and at least after Utah. And he never denied that after I found out there were drugs there, I wasn't willing to help anymore. He never claimed that.
Well, what about this as a rational inference? He learned that there were drugs in the car. He was stuck in Utah and he didn't have any way to get home. So he sat in the passenger seat for the rest of the journey and didn't do anything. Why is that inconsistent with the circumstances proved?
It is inconsistent with the circumstances proved here because he had a cell phone. The vehicle stopped at least once in Nebraska to get gas. He could have gotten out and asked for help or contacted the authorities there. So that doesn't account for those circumstances, that he had opportunities to abandon the activity, that he had a cell phone, he could call for help. He had an opportunity to simply leave the vehicle and contact the police and say that his aunt was transporting drugs across the country.
But Mr. Smith, why isn't it reasonable to think, okay, I'm now halfway across the country. I'm in Utah. I don't speak the language well. I have a language barrier here, a very significant language barrier. I came along because I thought, and the evidence is clear, he did not know of the drugs when the trip began. He didn't find out until much, much later. Should I just go along for the ride as a passive passenger, get to where we need to and get back home as soon as I can. Why isn't that a rational and a reasonable alternative hypothesis?
First of all, I think it's to the extent that you're drawing that inference from the claim that he didn't know until Utah, I don't think that you can include that. I've just assumed the Utah claim because I think the evidence is sufficient, even if we assume his self-serving statement that he didn't know until Utah is true. Quite frankly, if you're basing a rational inference inconsistent with guilt upon that particular circumstance, you've rendered a circumstance inconsistent then with the verdict.
And well, Mr. Smith, if I could stop you right there, I'm not sure if that's correct because possession is an element that has to be proved. What is proof in the record that he knew of the drugs? And so the evidence in the record, one of the circumstances proved is when he admitted and acknowledged that he discovered that there were drugs in the backpack. So I think that is a circumstance proved.
The circumstance proved is that he knew there were drugs in the car.
But I think it's important to know when that occurred. He didn't know the drugs at the beginning of the trip. I think if he knew of the drugs at the beginning of the trip, this would be a very, very different case.
Well, but I want to point out that the district court did not find that he only knew after they were in Utah. The district court found that at the very latest, he knew that there were drugs in the car in Utah. He admitted they knew there were drugs in the car. That's a circumstance proof. To the extent that he claims that he didn't know until they were in Utah is inconsistent with the court's verdict, then it's not amongst the circumstances proved. Because remember, under Harris, the circumstances proved have to be winnowed down to only those facts which are consistent with the verdict that's rendered. And moreover,
what's the evidence that the state presented that he knew that there were drugs in the car before he got to Utah? Because you still have the burden of proving those facts by beyond a reasonable doubt.
I don't have the burden of proving he knew before he was in Utah.
I'm just asking, did you prove that at trial?
Well, but if it's something that the state doesn't have the burden of proving, then it's not something that we have to ask whether it was proved. What the court found is that he knew there were drugs in the car. And that's what's material to the verdict. That's the circumstance proved, is his knowledge of the drugs in the car. And to the extent that the court has serious concerns about the question of possession here, I would go back to the point about count three. Count three is a conspiracy. It's a conspiracy to import drugs into the state of Minnesota from another state. The defendant admitted to being involved in that conspiracy. He admitted that he was there to help his aunt drive to Minnesota. He admitted that he continued in the car after he knew there were drugs in the car. He knew the destination. He knew that they would receive particular directions as to where to deliver the drugs when they arrived. It's the state is not required to prove that he possessed the drugs in order for him to be guilty of conspiracy. Otherwise, there would be no point in charging a conspiracy. Certainly, for there to be a conspiracy to import the drugs into the state, someone has to possess the drugs. That's what Tracy stands for. It does not stand for the proposition that all of the conspirators must together possess the drugs.
So your position is that Tracy stands for the proposition that as long as one of the co-conspirators is in possession of the drugs, that another can be guilty of conspiracy if they assist the person who is in possession of the drugs.
Correct. I think that's the only reasonable reading of Tracy. And I think that resolves the case here because that's the only element, possession is the only element of the offense that the appellant has attacked as having insufficient evidence. And in light of that limited challenge, this court at the very least should, if it concludes that the evidence is insufficient as to count two, should vacate that conviction and remand to the district court for entry of a conviction and imposition of sentence on count three. The state maintains that that's not necessary, that the circumstances proved here exclude all rational inferences inconsistent with the defendant having constructively possessed the drugs in question. And for that reason, I would ask this court to affirm the conviction. And if there are no further questions, I'll stop there.
It looks like there are no further questions. Thank you, counsel. Ms. Workman, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. I just want to remind the court that the state's theory at trial and what the district court focused on in its verdict order was that Mr. Nieto's possession was joint and constructive with Ms. Aguilar's. So this argument about exclusive control is completely new at this point, and it's against the law. Hunter is very clear. Hunter says that you have to control the object itself, not just the area. You have to have dominion and control over the contraband itself. And whatever Mr. Smith is arguing here about no case law or whatever, I'm not really even following that argument very well. That argument is a misapplication of the very well-established law on dominion and control in this state. Regarding Tracy and how to read that, Your Honor, concerning the conspiracy count, Tracy has to be read in conjunction with possession case law in this state as well, such as Florine, such as Harris. And I would just ask Your Honors to go back and read Tracy, to read the statute, and to interpret them according with the body of case law that is in existence for possession. And concerning the statements about whether it was unreasonable for him to try to leave when he found out about the drugs, I think your points are exactly correct, Judge Frisch and Judge Reyes. This is a person with significant language barriers. He knows no one in these areas. It is completely unreasonable to think that he would get out in an unknown area and try to call police or try to call for help. What do you do when you're in Utah? Do you call an Uber to Uber you back to Arizona or Mexico? It just does not make sense. And in reality here, this is not somebody who was trying to transport drugs, be a drug trafficker. He was going along with his aunt. And we need to not set aside common sense when we're looking at this case. And I would also just point out that the only evidence of his knowledge in this case is the state's own evidence that was introduced through the statement. And that statement is that he didn't know about the drugs until he was in Utah. Are there any other questions from the panel?
Does not look like anybody else has any questions. Thank you very much. Thank you both very much for your excellent briefing and oral arguments. We appreciate it from both parties. This is definitely an interesting issue that we have here. We will be issuing an order within the 90-day statutory